Hello, and welcome to the Cubicorn Games Podcast. My name is Dustin Morbido. It's going to be a very cardboard-centric day today.
He's a cardboard boy.
And joining me to apparently talk about cards and stuff, Lorraine Morbido is here.
Apparently against my will. Y'all can't see the gun. the metaphorical cardboard finger gun that will shoot rubber band.
We'll see how it goes. I'm still hoping to keep this relatively short, because the shorter they are, the easier they are to edit. But we're going to start off with a handful of small cucumber updates, and then just talk about game design things in general as they relate to, in this case, trading card games. So if that's a thing you'd be interested in, stick around. If not, you know.
Otherwise, save yourself.
Sorry. Maybe check out after the first 5 or 10 minutes. But I think that stuff is interesting, just because all parts of the game design discipline is not necessarily platform specific. So there are things to be learned from design in the tabletop space that can apply to video games and vice versa. And so from that perspective, I think it's interesting to talk about that stuff regardless. But as far as our stuff's going, we did push a cucumber update.
Yeah.
Last week, right?
Maybe.
I'm trying to remember how linear time works.
It goes forward.
Yeah.
It was only.
About a week ago as of this recording. A little longer, I guess. But and yeah, that seems to be going okay so far. I think we'll probably have another update in like late April. That's my guess.
April.
That again, we'll have new at least a couple new levels, more bug fixes, more tweaks, hopefully some more music. The only thing, major thing I have to report right now is that I'm going to really buckle down in the next couple weeks into getting a track or two done. Really specifically, the highest priority stuff is the title screen music, which doesn't exist yet, and a boss fight music, which I want to... That Cucumber to date has never had its own boss fight music. It's always been that one down the drain track.
You mean that one Space Quill track?
Whatever.
That's where it came from. Our fucking podcast intro song as well. Unless you change that.
No, it's...
I don't listen to
these.
Is that bad?
No, that's weird. But that's all stuff that's on my radar. And again, it's just one of those things of if I wish I had twice as many hours as I did, because it can be hard for me to shift modes from like every other game dev thing to like music specifically. But once I'm in one, I usually get a decent chunk done and then try to break off and do something in the other. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, having just pushed that most recent update. Mm-hmm. We'll do a little more music stuff, try to get one or two things knocked out in that realm, and then go from there. Rain, do you have anything else that you want to, any issues to raise, anything else to report?
I mean, I still got to... It's been really busy for me, like, work and life-wise the past couple weeks, so I haven't done, like, as much game dev-wise. Also, weather's changing. Finally, spring is basically here, and my head hates it. I've had, especially like the past couple days, just been plagued by some migraines that have like ground everything I do to almost a screeching halt in between dosages of ibuprofen. I'm hanging in there.
Like you mentioned, I guess it is worth noting that we've been doing some like adult stuff for the last week.
Yeah.
It's just like getting taxes done and
other
trying to
affairs in order.
Shuffle money around into like bank accounts to actually get some interest on some of it from like old stuff that have been sitting around somewhere. And
my interest rate for all of that will always be zero.
your personal interest rate?
Yeah.
So yeah, we've been doing some adult things.
Gross. I hate it.
Shopping for car insurance.
That's
you know,
true.
Things that
you know.
Things that grown-ups do. Mm-hmm. So it all takes time, but yeah, you're right. A lot. Like this past week has been a lot of that. And like on the side, I've been sifting through one of the like 40 folders I got from one of those humble bundles of music chunks, looking for like drum samples that sound good or shit like that. Mm-hmm. So
picking apart, I feel like every other time I come in there, you've just got
I'm
like,
almost
more
done.
Music.
There's
files
10 folders
open.
Left.
I know you got so many.
Yeah. Last night, there were 30 I hadn't gone through, and I was like, I'm gonna get through most of these, and then tonight I'm gonna finish.
Hooray!
But that's kind of where we're at with that stuff, and so yeah, we'll keep on trucking. Keep on making cucumber updates. I'll say it now, and I'll say it again at the end, but if you are interested in pinging us about anything, playing Cucumber or any of our other games of progress in the future, you can join our Discord server. Just go to cubicorngames.com and click the top of the page. And you can pop in there and check out the build we pushed last week and chat with us if you want. Yeah, tell me how bad my card game opinions are as we roll into that conversation. But like I said, Lorraine, if you don't have anything else, I think we'll just get right into it.
I mean, not really.
Before we started, I sat here and made notes to myself of things I wanted to mention specifically.
Yikes.
Yeah, I've been playing some more card game stuff again, and this isn't the first time we talked about it on the Contemporary Podcast, because a couple months ago, sometime late last year. We talked about Lorcana a little bit because it had pretty much just come out or was just going to come out. I forget
the exact timing.
But so there have been actually a decent amount of new card games entering the market, like trading card game type things, which I think is pretty interesting. I'm not sure if it's just like a boom and bust cycle where like just sometimes there are many new card games and sometimes there aren't. I feel like for a decent chunk of time, like I feel like before like One Piece came out or some of those, it was still just like for years at that point, it was just Pokemon, Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah, there was a bit of a resurgence. I feel like that's kind of around. Is that when like Panini Z came out? Or was, I honestly don't know the timeline of that One Piece game.
I think it's been more recent than that. But again, it was before I got back into following card games in any form.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I haven't played anything from, let's say, 2016 until late last year.
Yeah, give or take.
And before that, I played a million things in, like, the late 90s, 2000s. Like, I played OG Pokemon back in the day. I played a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh, a little bit of Magic. Played a ton of Dragon Ball. Got good at that. Good enough to win multiple events.
Woo!
And then, yeah, like I said, now I've just been kind of dipping a toe back in with some of these new games. And there are two things we're going to talk about, Lorcana being one, and then Star Wars Unlimited, I think is what it's called, being the other. And that thing, as of this recording, just came out like
last week.
Yeah, so it's very, very fresh. But the differences between them are really striking. And I think we'll, like I kind of want to touch on that a little bit in general. I'll start with Lorcana and then work my way backwards to Star Wars. But my initial impressions are that Lorcana was made by people who are uncharitably stupid and more charitably lazy. I almost hesitated to use that word because I try not to be that dismissive of game design stuff in general, but I have been very frustrated by some very obvious things that could be different in Lorcana, and the way they've chosen to build that game, I think, is a shame.
Do you know how much that kind of is based on like perceived market presence? Like, because this is a Disney property, because it's probably mostly being targeted at people who already like the brand and will buy it anyway, do you know if they're, like, not trying to hit, like, they're not actually trying to design a card game, they're trying to design cards that also you can play with?
I couldn't say, because it's, like, the thing is, it's not so incompetent that it's unplayable.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's a pretty low bar.
But I would still call it, on the whole, like, poorly considered. That's my personal opinion on how the game works three sets in.
Do you think that has anything to do with, like, the manpower that may or may not be being put behind it is because it's, like, a softball, like, this is a Disney thing.
It's kind of impossible for me to tell.
We don't really have to, like, we're not trying to win people on the game. Like, they're here because they like the mouse.
Sure. You could be right. I truly couldn't know that without an insight into, like, what the size of, like, the design teams and the playtest teams are and, like, the amount of time they get to mess with stuff. Sure. Without that information, I truly couldn't tell you.
This is all, like, looking at a black box. Like, neither of us have any 100%. Idea what the structure of Ravensburger
and their game division. Okay. And I know there are one or two people who are, like, publicly facing as the designers. I forget their names off the top of my head.
Poor souls.
And then, like, you know, playtesters, if they're lucky, they get credited. Like, when we playtested Metacross, we were fortunate enough to get, like, I'm pretty sure I still have one of those manuals, but they did credit. They printed all the playtesters' names in the rule book. But for Star Wars,
six of you.
For Star Wars, I was looking at their rule book out of curiosity, and they didn't do that. Like, they did all the designers and stuff. But if, like, I'm assuming there was a wider playtest team of people who had just tried the product that, they didn't make the cut in the rulebook credits, which kind of bummed me out a bit. There you go.
There's your labor.
That's my biggest criticism of the Star Wars card game so far, is that they didn't credit the playtesters by name in the rulebook. Like I said, we'll talk about Lorcana, we'll talk about Star Wars, but like I said, Lorcana in my mind in a wide scope is just kind of like, I would call it lazy at this point, three sets in. And Star Wars Unlimited, having one set out, and I've only played it, I've been exposed to about six games, because I played a set with Brian, and then we had a couple of our friends come over, Josh and Lauren, and they played. I walked them through. I taught them how to play, basically. Mm-hmm. And again, my initial impressions of Star Wars are, like, it reminds me of Street Fighter VI, for me, in that, like, that is a game that when it came out last year, I could see every little bit of it, where they sat down and looked at the games that came before, especially the most recent one, so in this case Street Fighter V, and they were like, how can we improve this? Like, let's look at every single pain point and do something about all of them to make it better. And then when I look at Lorcana, I see that they saw that Magic the Gathering is popular and successful, and that we can mostly just make that, but not do the due diligence card design-wise to make it, like, better. And so let's start there, because like I said, the Lurkana thing is like, I think there's a base level of laziness to it that snowballs into making the product worse as a whole. Because there are things about that game, like in Lurkana, you have 60 card decks. Mm-hmm. You draw 7 cards at the start of the game. You draw 1 card a turn, and then, you know, you play 1 resource a turn, and then can play cards equal to those resources.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, it is exactly a one-to-one Magic the Gathering, like all those things.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that the only reason they're like that is because it was very easy to just say, let's just do what Magic did.
It's a really simple kind of, like, I guess, engine was what you would call it.
Yeah, but... and ultimately, Lurkana and Star Wars are both curve games, which is basically like the type of, the genre of card game that Magic created in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, you'll draw a handful of cards at the start of the game, draw some number of cards periodically every turn, and then play 1 resource a turn. In Magic, if you have them, because mm-hmm. the lands are their own specific card type. In Lurkana, you can resource
like
many of the cards in
Pokemon
your deck.
Games,
right.
Basically. There's a bespoke card type for the resource where both Lurkana and Star Wars, you can kind of do whatever with those at the cost of not being able to play those cards.
Right, to some extent, for sure. In Star Wars, you can literally resource anything. In Lurkana, mm-hmm. you can resource a large subset of the cards. Like, it's just a designation of whether it's resourceable or not. Yeah, but Lurkana takes all that stuff from Magic. Like I said, the 60, the deck limits, the hand size, all that stuff is just the number, quantity of cards that you can have in a deck. You can have up to 4 copies of any card in your mm-hmm. deck. That's all copy-pasted from Magic in a way that I think makes the game a little worse. Especially the card limit one, which I'll get back to when I talk about some other stuff. Because I think if Lurkana were exactly the way it was now, but even had, like, 3 cards per deck instead of 4.
Three copies of a card per deck instead of four.
It would make the decks way more interesting because you'd have to run a wider diversity of stuff in your build in general.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now you can really stack up on the stuff you want the most. Oh, which makes the games feel kind of boring and samey. And that stacks up with the Lurkana mulligan system, which is interesting and different than both Magic and Star Wars, where in Magic, basically, you draw a hand, and if you don't like it, you shuffle it back into your deck, and you draw 1 less card.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was what it was like back in the day. I don't know if they changed it, so because I haven't played Magic in a long time. So there is a penalty for mulliganing your original hand. And in Lurkana, it's like the exact opposite. It's like a super juiced mulligan. So in Lurkana, you draw your opening hand. You can take any of the cards you want and put them at the bottom of your deck.
And then draw that exact
And then draw
amount.
The exact same amount, mm-hmm. and then you shuffle them up. So not only... You can basically prune your hand way better in Lurkana,
mm-hmm.
Which on paper, I think I really liked. And like in theory, depending on what your card pool is like and what your engine is built for,
it could
I
be
think
a game
it is cool.
Changer. Yeah.
Yeah, but in practice... The card design is so basic and requires you to commit so little to get so much power that I think mm-hmm. it just distracts from the game in general because there are big cards that can swing an entire match that functionally have no cost to do that other than just placing them on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be one of my other biggest criticisms of Lurkana is that I don't think they have done enough to make you earn really powerful effects. And that this is a like across-the-board criticism of their card design in general, which again, I think is just... in my mind, is just a product of laziness, honestly.
I also think, like, I've got some suspicions. I think a lot of that might even come, like, in more vein from, like, Pokemon, where it is, like, a franchise that has, like, its winners and losers of, like, character types. Like, they're gonna juice the more popular characters, obviously. Or, like, it, like locations, so whatever the hell it is. The, like, the money makers are gonna have the biggest... bestest effects on them and be the most broken. DBZ was kind of like that too, but I feel like Pokemon is more egregiously like that because there are just like so many Pokemon and they'll make some of the like actual dog shittiest cards be some of like the least popular dudes, but they have to make the cards because they're in the like Pokedex or whatever, but like your Mewtwo's, your Charizards, your Gengars, your Garchomps are always going to be like the biggest, bestest boys you've ever fucking seen and dominate and just destroy literally everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a suspicion kind of like what I was saying earlier, like that they're catering to like the fans in like quotes or whatever hard by making the bestest guys the bestest cards.
Yeah, probably. And again, I think there's some aspect of that I think I just fundamentally disagree with certain card designers where I feel like they're, by default, some people like to build stuff where it's like...
this is good and this is bad.
I like turns to feel like episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh! On television where you can just kind of plop down one thing and it changes the whole pace of the game in one single action for no other cost. And I do think there's a lot of cases where designers build that into card games explicitly, whereas that's a thing I would explicitly avoid if I was building a trading card game personally. Like things that can swing the momentum of a match like completely around with,
I mean,
again,
I'd even say almost like all game design in general, kind of like Deus Ex button in a game of whatever kind you want, your supers in Destiny or turning on some kind of god mode with very little whatever. Like, I think it's lazy. Oh, that's just me.
But again, in conforming to the Magic formula, like I said, the one thing that Lorcana does better, which is, again, this is the lowest of low bars because every game that's not Magic has done this, is that the resource system is better. Like, to this day, I still think lands are terrible because they either slow down or totally stop the pace of play if you just draw incorrectly too many times. And again, I'm not surprised by that because Magic was the first one. So they were making it up as they went along. It still blows me away that they haven't, like, gone and reevaluated that in some way. But I mean, I guess that game has such a weird legacy now that it's almost impossible to do.
It's just like, so much tradition at this point.
Yeah, but it's why I don't really care about Magic. One of the main reasons, personally, in a popular context, is that just like that game is older and crustier than stuff that's come after it because the newer games got to learn from Magic's mistakes. Like from they got to learn from the things about it that are the chunkiest and
it's such an establishment at this point that like any big shift might destroy it, honestly. Like, the people who really like Magic as it is. And disrupting that would maybe make more of the seams show. Like, the people who are giving it the most slack are the ones who have, like, fully the entire pitcher of Kool-Aid at this point and aren't going away. They're lifers now, which is fine. But, like, people who probably come into it fresher, see the cracks as what they are, and then go play something else that has iterated past the initial, like, groundbreaking that Magic had.
Right. So, again, in Magic, lands are their own specific card type. They don't do anything other than provide mana, basic lands, and then there are special ones that also sometimes do other stuff.
Extra special boys.
But they still aren't, like, creatures or artifacts, whatever, most of the time.
You don't do anything with them aside from use them to play things that do things.
Yeah. And in Lorcana, like you said, basically any card is either resourceable or not. And that's just a little arbitrary designation. Like, there's a little symbol around the card cost that shows whether it's resourceable or not. And that is just an arbitrary designation that they, you know, push or pull to basically, like, juice a card's power or take it back a little bit. Which is fine. Like I said, that's all. This is in the positives for Lorcana camp. That's all okay. I have no issues with any of that. And then, again, turn sequencing, like, you take turns in a similar way to Magic, where one player does all their stuff and then another player does all their stuff. It is less interactable than Magic in that there are no instant effects. So there's nothing you can do on your opponent's turn, which, again, I actually think is a positive in many ways, but is another thing that I think Star Wars does even better, which we'll get to. But, like, instant speed spells and, like, the way the stack works in Magic, it's way too fiddly and way too complicated for my taste. And, again, that's going to be, like, to some degree, personal preference. But I do think most games after it have done better to in one way or another, including Lorcana. Like, I think there are problems with the way Lorcana works in other ways, but I think that choice is better than the opposite of, like, having instants and, like, making, like, a really complex, like, back-and-forth interactive thing in a game that is ostensibly, to some degree, for, like, people who have never played card games before because they're trying to pull people in with a Disney property. But then the card draw amount is also the same as Magic, and this is my, like, first big... It was the first thing that I didn't love about Lorcana, and it's the first thing that I really liked when I read the Star Wars rules, was that if you build a game that's exactly like Magic, including the same, like, base mechanics of how many cards you have in your hand to start and how many cards you draw a turn, each player's hand ultimately will trend negative without other cards that give card advantage, because every turn you're going to draw one card, and you ideally want to play two or more cards. You want to at least play a resource and at least play something else.
Whatever. Build momentum. And that's your engine going.
Right, and that's just a choice. So if you choose to build your game like that, then the value of card advantage cards increases because you need them. Like, you will literally just lose if you cannot at some point have other cards that explicitly fill your hand with more cards. But again, you don't have to build your game that way. You can make players draw cards in a different manner. Like, you could have an intrinsic mechanic that, like, when certain cards are swept off the table you draw, you can just have people draw more cards at the start of the turn, which is what Star Wars does. You just draw two cards a turn instead of one. There's all kinds of ways that you can do it that aren't just putting card advantage effects on specific cards.
Yeah.
And in that sense, Lorcana has just done that. And they've also, for the most part, segregated it into one card type.
Cool.
Like, there's the purple type, Amethyst, I think is what it's called, because they're all, like, gems or precious metals or whatever. Like, one of the trait stamped effects of that color is drawing cards.
So it's the good, it's the one you want.
And
to
so
use.
It is, yeah, it is by far the one that is the most represented in gameplay.
Unsurprising.
Because it's basically like easy mode playing that color.
Yeah.
Like you just have to try less to accomplish shit. And then it's stacked up with it also has some of the most powerful individual card effects in the game. Because in my opinion, the most, one of the most unbalanced cards until set three. So now it has two of the most unbalanced cards.
Nice.
One of the most unbalanced cards from a value proposition is the Merlin Rabbit card.
Uh huh.
And it's basically like a four-drop character that is like a mid-sized creature that when you play it and whenever it leaves play for any purpose, you draw a card.
Great.
And it's meant to synergize with other cards that like they basically, if you've ever seen Sorcerer in the Stone, there's a
no,
little...
No, it's the Sword in the Stone.
Sword in the Stone, thank you. I was thinking Sorcerer because the cards are all Sorcerer types.
Yeah.
Like that's what they're trait stamped as, but
There's a contest between Merlin
and Madame Mim, where they're like turning each other or themselves into creatures or both.
I think they're turning themselves into creatures.
Yeah, to dodge
like,
the other thing that they're doing. And so those cards all synergize together in the Lorcana set that they're in, where they basically have card effects that involve either they're a strong card that requires you to put a card back in your hand to play it,
mm-hmm.
or they're a card that does something both when it enters play and when it leaves play.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Mim ones bounce cards, they put cards back in your hand, and the Merlin cards do stuff. They do stuff when they come out and leave. And those effects all stack together, combined with the inherent card advantage of purple as a color
mm-hmm.
or whatever. It's just like, it is way more than other non-purple colors to keep up with in terms of just having resources and being able to do stuff. And you combine that fact with the Mims have a different... Again, this is where I think a lot of the laziness comes in. Because in Magic, that wouldn't be quite as big of a deal, right? Because you wouldn't have as much like multi-utility out of the cards you bounce back to your hand, for example.
Sure.
Like in Magic, that is one strength of... If you were to build effects just like this in Magic the Gathering, that like you couldn't use, you know... If you have a 1/1 elf creature and you bounce it to your hand with some other effect to do something,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't also have the leverage to play that card as a land. Where in Lorcana you can, like you have that vector. So actually bouncing cards is usually almost always beneficial
mm-hmm.
in Lorcana, where in Magic it would have been almost the exact opposite ratio. It would have been almost always negative. Like you'd rather have cards in play than like have to put them back in your hand because ultimately you have to pay to cast them again.
Mm-hmm.
And in Lorcana you could use them for other stuff. And
Up a guy who's kind of like hurt or whatever and then just ink him to become more resources.
Yeah, and one of the other big problems with Lorcana versus Magic, and again, I think the most of this derives from, at a base level, they took most of the mechanics from Magic, but like changed a few of them but didn't adjust the count or design to account for this, is that the combat systems are also very different. So in Magic, and this is different across many card games too, so I guess in Star Wars Magic and Lorcana, they're all different. In Magic, you basically declare attacks. So if you have creatures out or whatever, you say, I'm attacking with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then your opponent gets to choose what to do. They can either take the damage directly to their life total, or if they have other creatures out, they can block with them,
mm-hmm.
essentially. Like, they can say, no, you're going to deal damage to this thing instead. In Star Wars, which is the route that most games derived from Magic have gone, the attacker just chooses what they're swinging on. So if you have a character out in Star Wars, like you have a Luke Skywalker on the table, mm-hmm. and they have Darth Vader, you say, I'm going to attack with Luke Skywalker, and I'm going to attack your Darth Vader. So you choose the target, and then mm-hmm. they just like deal damage to each other. In Lorcana, it does work that way where you still choose the targets you're attacking, but you can only attack characters that are already exhausted,
mm-hmm.
tapped, which is not true of either of the other games. That is another thing combined with the lack of instant speed spells that like makes interaction much more complicated. It basically, again, in terms of base engine design leading into card design, it elevates the power of cards that come into play and do something much higher,
mm-hmm.
cards that do things instantly as opposed to cards that do things later. And it elevates cards that target specific cards for damage outside of like normal combat sequencing, which is another thing we'll get into, which is why one of the other colors is much better than many of the other ones. And so with all that stuff combined, not only do those bounce characters that I talked about, they basically get the advantage of, like I said, you can use the cards you bounce for more than one purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They also synergize really well with this other choice that has been made by the engine, where since the best cards in the whole game are the ones that do something in the instant you put them into play, because that's a thing you totally control on your turn. Like, if you play a card on your turn, that's happening. Your opponent can't do anything about it. So any card that says, like, when played, do something positive is basically better than any other card.
Yeah.
The Mims do that you can bounce characters that do that and then repeat those effects multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no restrictions on that whatsoever, which is my big, like, you could have kept all this if you were just smarter about designing the individual cards, in my opinion, because it synergizes with so many powerful things. Like, there are characters that, like, you know, one of them is an explicit Merlin card that just gives you points when you bounce it back and forth, and so it synergizes with that. Or there are other characters from different colors that do things like destroy a character when you play them, and looping those gives you an insane amount of momentum for, again, basically no cost, just like playing a small character, and then you get to plop down something else and, like, totally fuck up the board.
This is giving me, like, Namekian flashbacks.
Something like that. And the easy, and if you were smart, proper way to do this, to account for this, would be to trait stamp stuff harder, so that you had to work a little harder in the deck building process to get really powerful effects.
Yeah.
So like I said, all those cards that are in that stack are like sorcerer stamped. So if literally you just change the two best mems, there's the 2-drop and a 3-drop one that bounce characters to hand. If you made those effects just so that you had to bounce like sorcerer cards, right, then like that solves like 80% of the problem with all of that, because you'd have to really hard send it. Like, this is really good, but if you want to actually, like, you know, use it consistently and make the most out of it, like, you truly have to commit. You can't just mush together, you know, a pile of the 60 best cards in the game and then go for it. And fundamentally, that is my big problem with Lorcana, is that, I forget if I had said this earlier, but while when we tested a game called Metacross for a little bit, which was a card game no one played, but you could look it up if you want. My name's in the manual.
Don't you know who I am?
The first set of those cards was pretty much just like a whole set of generically good cards that kind of just, you could use any of them and together in any way. And it was like a DC superhero themed set. So it was like, you know, heroes and villains, whatever. You use Lex Luthor with Superman, it's fine. It doesn't matter. And for an initial expansion, I think that's ultimately fine for the most part. Because, again, the card pool is going to be real small.
Yeah, a little more vanilla isn't terrible for, like, a first step in. You can start, like, expanding from there.
Yeah, but one of our main notes coming out of that first set, which we did ultimately, like, Richie, the guy who was in charge, the designer on that game, did ultimately take to heart and did implement going forward, was that, like, you cannot do 2, 3, 5, 6 sets where every single card in all these sets is just kind of like generically good and boundless, and you can just kind of smoosh any pile of them together no matter what and just get all the best effects in the game by just plucking all the best characters and putting them all together. And Lorcana, more often than not, especially with their most powerful cards, has done just that. Where I think another really solid example of that in the third set, the one that's out now, is there's an Ursula card. It's like a 3-drop character that whenever she sings a song, which is another mechanic that I'll explain in a second, you get to play that card a second time and put it at the bottom of your deck.
The song?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so songs are basically just like sorceries and magic. They're just a spell that does something. But the being a song, Lorcana has both. They have normal actions, which are exactly like a sorcery and magic. Like, you pay its cost in mana, you do a thing, and you discard it. A spell is that, except it, or
a song.
A song is that, except it also has the added mechanic of, instead of paying its cost, you can choose to exhaust a character with a cost equal to or greater than the cost of the song. So if Ursula is a 3-drop, you can basically tap her on your turn to play a 3-cost song for free. And then if you do that, you get to do that card 2 times, and then you put it at the bottom of your deck. And that's another example of, like, that card comes out on turn 3, which is pretty early.
Yeah.
And if you get to do that, like, that's pretty much a game-winning play at that point. Like, it gives you so much momentum. And again, that's another criticism I have. I really like the idea of songs in theory, but I think they've, again, just, like, balanced the power poorly. The things they're capable of doing, some of them sweep characters off the table, like, they just do a ton of damage. Some of them draw cards. Some of them do both.
are all those purple songs?
Well, most of those are steel ones, so that's the other really good style, is the steel is the one that does damage directly to things. But there's also a steel card, one steel card that does damage and draws a card, and it's a song. But when you combine all the, when you stack that, like, effects that are that good on cards that you can play for free, like, I think it would have been a really good modifier mechanic for, like, B tier and under cards. Like, we're going to cap the power on things that are singable to be, like, kind of middle of the road things that you might include in a deck, but, like, we're going to try to juice them a little bit to give you a little more incentive to play them. Not like other cards that you would just play by default anyway, and they really haven't done that. Like, the power scale on songs is all over the place. And with a card like that Ursula card, again, you can put her in any deck. She's not, like, trait stamped anyway. I mean, you have to run the color green because she is an emerald character or whatever. But that's it. And then you just play her on the table, and if you get to execute her ability, like, you probably win. Like, you have a way outsized chance of winning the game from just playing one character once. With no other restrictions on deck building other than color, and, again, a relatively minimal amount of player inactivity, because, like, if you just leave her ready, there's a small subset of things that your opponent can do about it.
Chipper,
yeah, like, there are a handful of purple cards, a handful of steel cards that that can, like, address it, but otherwise not so much.
It's one of the things that, like, just kind of thinking about, like, that kind of level of, like, power gating, I guess, in a way. Like, that's one of the things that I like about games more similar to Pokemon, where it is like, it's less of a resource and more of a like, you need to have the worst version of this guy before you can have the better one. Like, yeah. Especially with, I mean, basic legendary Pokemon are just always going to be insane. They've always kind of been a problem, by my understanding. But like, your stage twos, your final evolutions in a three set line, are generally pretty good in a lot of cases. And like, you have to work for those in that way. So, and like, you have to keep the smaller one alive, which could easily be like swept away, and like, they don't remove damage when they evolve and stuff like that. Like, Digimon kind of does a similar-ish thing, but I still want to play more of that new game because its way of dealing with resources is so wild, and sure. I really like it. But yeah, and like, they have a little more, it's less like, the typing in Pokemon is less like different, like the magic denotation of styles or TBZ or Morcana or whatever, where it is just kind of like, you need the resources to play it, but you can put whatever you want in here. Like, it's more about like having a finely tuned engine as opposed to like, this just wins. Like, you can do a lot of weird things with different, like, I think the favorite deck of mine that I built in Pokemon was like in, it had to have been in X and Y, like, I don't remember what set exactly, but it was a mono fairy deck and relied heavily on Gardevoirs, and like, I think they were EX Gardevoir, so I didn't have to play the base form, Xerneas's Mega Gardevoir, and then a bunch of littler guys who like buffed them and helped like the stack. They all kind of synergized with each other, and it wasn't great. Like, it wasn't a really good deck, but I didn't do terrible with it. I was mostly playing online in their little client or whatever. That was around the time that Night March was happening. Shout out to Night March and Lysander's Gambit. That was terrible. Or Lysander's Last Resort, whatever the fuck that card was. It got banned.
Sure. But again, Pokemon, like, that point is, like, Pokemon is another game that I haven't taken seriously for years. No. Because I feel like I personally feel like the card design in Pokemon is very
poor. Over the board, yes. I think they, like, basically, they make cards because they have to, so they make trash. 90% of the time, like, you, like, in a set, you'd probably throw out more than you would keep because most of it's garbage.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that general, like, I don't know if it's just because I like that a little more than like the resource management of something like Lorcana or like traditional magic, if you will. Like, that isn't as appealing to me, but I kind of like the, like, I don't want to have to, the cost for playing this guy is that I have to keep him alive as opposed to like, I feel like in those curve games, things are a little more robust or they're much more disposable. Whereas like basic, like actual, like little, like your Charmander is a lot more like kind of fragile. Like, he's basically made of wet paper towel, but you have to keep him around long enough to make him a Charizard.
Although again, that's another big problem I have with Pokemon as they've evolved that game, is that that's not even true.
No, yeah, it's
like,
a nightmare.
Because they put all the EX cards
so
that are
stupid,
just a gigantic stupid thing that has 400 health
all,
and you just drop on the table turn one.
They're
yeah,
just
exactly.
Basic. It's dumb.
I think Pokemon is also made by morons.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I never played it back in the day.
I'm not apologizing to you. I'm apologizing to the world. But
I played it for like a stint of time because of you. You got me more into it because you knew I liked Pokemon and you liked card games, so... Putting them together just saves rope.
Sure.
But yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, because coming back to like, because again, that does speak to one of my big pet peeves about card game design in general, is that like, you shouldn't let players have access to just a tremendous amount of generically valuable resources for absolutely free. And Pokemon, I think, does that in the form of those giant characters where, like, you take multiple prizes or whatever from killing them. But the cost benefit is so skewed that like, you definitely would never... It is never worth it to, like, evolve up to the third Charizard or whatever with whatever version is out relative to just, like, playing the
Charizard,
EX thing immediately and just, like, take the initial advantage no matter what. And then, if it goes down, they get a few more points or whatever. But, like, who cares?
You could just drop one of those first turn if you had them. Like, the fact that you can do that, like, they're just basic Pokemon.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping you from just, like, here's Mewtwo EX. I win the game now.
And so,
he's done that multiple times. Multiple Mewtwos have been very big problems.
And so taking that back to my same point about Lorcana and about that Ursula card specifically, that's a card that, again, shit is just so obvious. So if you don't see it, then you're not good at your job. or like, there's other extenuating circumstances, which I'll also touch on in a second. It's mostly monetary.
What?
But, But that, so that card, like I said, it, the two resources that you would want to be the most hesitant about just giving out for completely free in a curve game are resources and card advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want people to probably work at least a little bit for one of them, and definitely work for both of them. Because if a card gives you both, they should, it should be put in like a non-zero effort in terms of deck building,
yeah,
or like sequencing or cost, initial upfront cost, or
specialization
all
or whatever.
Yeah. And so that is, the card completely circumvents that. Like, mm-hmm, I said, you kind of just play it on the table. And then there are so many good songs in the game that, like, if you, statistically speaking, you will have one or two good songs in your hand if you're just, like, even remotely okay at
building decks. Is Wonderwall there?
And so when you use her ability, maybe when you use her ability,
anyway,
she instantly gives you for free, for no other effort than placing on the table once, double the amount of free resources you get from playing the song, because you, like, mm-hmm, song costs something, singing it makes it free, and then she gets to do it again, and if it and double the amount of card advantage, whether the card even draws cards or not, because it's like having two copies of it,
yeah,
in your hand,
you,
instead
you played
of one.
Two cards.
Yeah, so so she basically gives you at minimum like an extra card and three extra resources just for playing on the table for nothing and no, mm-hmm, other reason. And the two things like you could do among many others. Like, you could move that card's cost up a little bit, which we could give it more access to songs, which would be kind of interesting, just to, so, mm-hmm, that it comes into play later and is more impactful late game.
Yeah.
The things that I would be more likely to do would, again, trait stamp it or give it some more other kind of upfront cost. Like, if it was just like, you know, while you control only villain characters,
mm-hmm,
when she sings a song, blah, blah, blah. Or even just when she sings a song, you may discard a card from your hand to sing it again and put it at the, mm-hmm, bottom of your deck. So in that sense, it's still really fucking good. Like, if that card did that, it would still probably see almost as much play as it does now, but it would be way less of a game-swinging, like, total resource-generating, mm-hmm, monster.
Yeah.
And those are two things that I had thought of after looking at that card for 2 minutes. And so you either are lazy, are dumb, if you don't think of ways to tamp down an ability like that, or the third thing, which is another real big problem I have with Lorcana that is less true in Star Wars so far, in my opinion,
mm-hmm,
is that the power delta between the least expensive and most expensive cards is very high in Lorcana. Mm. And so that's a thing that all card games do, where, like,
oh,
whatever,
yeah,
the highest rarity is in general cards. I mean, Destiny does that too.
Yeah.
Like in games in general.
Games in general. If something
is hard to, yeah, get, it's usually a little more powerful than stuff that's easy to get.
Yeah.
And in Lorcana, Ursula is a legendary card, so she's one of the hardest. She's the highest rarity tier. She's,
mm-hmm,
you pull a couple of them from a box if you're lucky. And so they've done that across the board of, like, they are really ready to juice overall card power just based on rarity in Lorcana in,
yeah,
a way that I think is shitty. and in a way that, like I said, other games, depending on set to set and, like, you know, era to era, you,
mm-hmm,
know, they're all over the place. But, yeah, Pokemon's totally fall into that trap, too.
Oh, yeah.
Where all the best stuff is just a pile of shiny EX cards.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, like, they've also, like, just doubled up on that because it's like, oh, you can get an EX card. But you could get the full art EX card. You could get the rainbow full art EX card. I'm pretty sure all modern sets now have three versions of the same card at, mm-hmm, those different rarities. And it's just bonkers.
Yeah. And like I said, it's still too early to tell,
mm-hmm,
how this is going to play out with Star Wars. And it can change in any game because in any,
sure,
given set, that value can shift.
Absolutely.
But my initial assessment of having seen three sets of Lorcana and having seen one set of Star Wars Unlimited is that they have done a better job in Star Wars of narrowing that delta between, like, the top end cards are still very good.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they are going to be the best cards in the game, straight up. Mm-hmm. But there are also really good rares and commons and uncommons, mm-hmm, that are, like, obviously much easier to get. But they still, you can have powerful effects on those tiers of cards, too.
Mm-hmm.
In a relative manner, in a way that I think is healthier than Lorcana
and
does.
And, like, the special cards aren't limited to that higher tier. Like, it's a full art.
Mm-hmm.
For, like, of a, like, I think one is, like, maybe thrown into every pack or potentially could
be
in a pack or whatever.
In a while.
And every card has a version of that, to my understanding, correct?
In Star Wars, yeah, everything,
yeah,
can be a full art. And then they again, for, like, their actual ultimate, like, super high tier chase cards, Lorcana and Star Wars are both fine because they're functionally the same. Where,
mm-hmm,
like, you know, Star Wars has, I think they're even both called legendary tier.
Maybe, I couldn't
that all
tell
card
you.
Games are doing that now, I guess. But, like, mm-hmm, the actual highest unique card effect rarity is legendary in Lorcan and Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And then Star Wars has, I forget what they're called, like the hyperspace ones are like the full arts, and that mm-hmm. could be any card. And then there's also a super mega.
Is that why they've got the speed lines on them? That's so silly.
And then there's like a super mega ultra versions of like alt art foils of the main character cards in Star Wars mm-hmm. that are like, those are the true chase cards in that.
The Lorcan's or whatever.
Yeah, and then Lorcan's got enchanted cards, which are, again, they're just
fancy.
Any other card from the set, but in a crazy full art foil. And that's fine.
Can
like
it
I
be
said,
every
I...
card? Does every card have one for Lorcan?
No, it's a subset. It's like 12 or 18 cards. And the first two sets, I think there were 12 of them. And the third set, I think they added six more. So I think it's 18. But it's just a subset of cards they curated that
have
alt art foil versions.
I don't know if I've ever... Do you have any of those? I don't know if I've ever seen one.
I have one or two.
Oh, okay.
But,
I just don't.
anyway.
It all blends together.
But yeah, like I said, those are my big complaints about Lorcana that, again, I feel like if you are any good at or have any interest in, like, making a more robust game that is less susceptible to power creep, mm-hmm. like, you could have done it with Lorcana very easily, and I feel like they really haven't. Because that trait stamp thing is also the best thing you can do to mitigate power creep other than just rotating cards out of the card pool. Like, Magic historically had done that with standard format, which mm-hmm. I guess they still do, but I don't think people play standard that much. Where, like, you know, the last 3 years or so of cards will be, usable.
I mean, Pokemon does that really hard.
Yeah, and Pokemon, right, does the same thing. And then everything else, like, goes into the vault, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't use it in competitive events. And I have no problem with that. I think that's a very reasonable way to keep a game fresh mm-hmm. and to give you room to continue to make new stuff as the years go on. But there, you will still be making cards in those, like, you know, 3 to 4 year blocks besides that. And so if you want to keep new cards interesting, your options are you do ride the power creep train. Mm-hmm. Like, you keep making stuff in the next set a little bit better than the old ones.
Just keeps going up.
Until you eventually rotate stuff out, and then you kind of, like, reset the cycle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like I said, you can mitigate that a little bit by spreading really powerful stuff out, stamping it to harder sets of cards. So if you do stuff like trait stamping a lot, where it's like, oh, the best... There's, like, a really good green card in Magic, and it's an elf. But it only mm-hmm. does the really good thing if you have other elves in play. So to take the maximum advantage of this card, you have to have a bunch of elves. Like, you can't just run mm-hmm. any fucking thing under the sun. And again, that's where Lorcana, I think, has fallen down completely. And from an initial point, Star Wars looks to be in a very much better place mm-hmm. where a lot of really good effects are already, like, if you have Rebels or, like, this it searches for an Imperial card...
Airborne units, ground
right.
units.
Right, yeah. Like, they've done a better job, I think, with one expansion than Lorcana has done with three. And again, that could change, because they'll release new cards. Who knows what the fuck they'll do in the future. But absolute bleeding edge, like, power tier stuff should be probably, to some degree, tied to a theme, just mm-hmm. so that it's not, like, a free-for-all of, like, how many cool cards you can use in any given deck.
Yeah.
And the Star Wars deck building rules are really interesting, too, where, like, there are traits that... I guess we'll segue into talking about Star Wars and Isle of Lorcana,
mm-hmm.
Just so I can explain a little more about that game in general.
Just another Disney property.
It's all Disney down... fucking...
Let's talk about Digimon and
stuff. But yeah, so my opinion... Like I said, my opinions on Lorcana are that it was a cool game in theory that I feel like has just gotten a little bit worse over time. Mm-hmm. Again, not like unplayably bad. I don't think it is like... You know, I think it's like a C-minus tier product... Where I think with a little bit, just a little bit, like 10 to 15% more intelligence and effort could have been like a B+, A- tier product.
So doing slightly better than the Walt Disney Company itself.
There you go.
It's a thin margin.
But yeah, the problem being that, like, I only foresee the trend continuing.
Yeah.
Where, like, as every expansion has come out, I think the game has gotten a little bit worse, and I kind of think that's going to keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal opinion. But in looking at Star Wars, like I said, I feel like they have laid the groundwork to not make a lot of the same mistakes Lorcana has. But time will tell.
Uh-huh.
We'll see. There's been one expansion out for about a week. So it is way too early to call any of that stuff. I will say, by default, again, a lot of stuff I think is really positive. That, again, putting my game design goggles on, I can look at it and see that, like, mm-hmm. all right, people who looked at this were smart enough to say, like, what are some, like, pain points or just some overall, like, clunky things about other games like the game we're making that we can improve in our product.
Yeah.
And so I think the opening game thing is a really positive sign, where basically the Star Wars starts, you draw six cards, you can mulligan once, you just shuffle them up and you draw six more. There's no penalty, but it's not quite the, like, curated,
mm-hmm.
like, pick anything you want, like Lorcana either. And then you immediately put two resources down from your hand. And that's a really small, really subtle thing, Because the game still has one-cost cards, so you can still play one-cost characters. But, like, in my mind, it's just so smart, because in 95% of, you know, curve games, both players' turn ones are going to be like, play something, play a resource pass, or play a resource, play one extremely obvious character. And so why not circumvent that? Like, why not just move the game up to turn two and just, like, keep the pace of things along? So, again, that stuff is, like, I see those decisions being made, and I'm like, all right, the people making this thought about it. And then, again, another, like... This is a thing. You're making a new game. You can do whatever you want. You draw two cards every turn, which I think is very beneficial to a curve game, because it does take some of the pressure off having to have a bunch of hard card advantage.
Yeah, that one card isn't as, like...
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be as, like, holy grail-ish
it
as
can
anything.
Just let builds breathe more, because you do not, like... In a curve game where you're the number of cards you automatically recoup every turn are not equal to, like, at least two plays... Then, like, by turn three or four at the latest, if you do not have some form of card advantage, you are losing. Like, you're just losing. But there's no reason the game has to be that way. And so they accounted for that. They're like, all right, you'll draw more cards a turn, gives players more options in general. And you can, every turn you draw, the draw phase and the resource phase are the same. So you draw two cards, and then immediately you can choose any card in your hand and resource it. And you don't have to. So if you're, like, mid to late game, you feel like, I want to keep everything, and I'm just going to run the risk of having a few more resources on the board, or, like, you know, you get to turn seven and you're like, I'm good, I'm full up. It'll just give you more cards to play with. That's another really positive, like, give people the option,
that was really
people
interesting.
Pick stuff. And then the combat sequencing and system, I think, is also, in my opinion, better than either Lorcana or Magic. Because similar to Lorcana, there aren't quite instant spells in that, like, you play something and your opponent, like, puts up their finger and goes, I have this in response.
My trap card.
Right. But the turn sequence of Star Wars goes, basically players share a quote-unquote round, which is basically, like, in totality a turn. Like, because you'll start by playing resources, and then you have a turn, and then once that turn ends, you play more resources. And you and in Star Wars, you pass back and forth priority.
You take an action.
Yeah, like Dragon Ball Z. So, like the start of the game, you just roll dice or whatever, see who goes first. And then whoever takes the first action does one thing. So they either attack with a character or play a card from their hand or, you know, activate an activated ability on the table, or they just pass. And then after that player has done one thing, the opponent gets to do one thing. And then you just do that and go back and forth until both players pass simultaneously.
Yeah, they're just exhausted.
Yeah, until both players are done doing stuff. And then you both draw cards, you both put down a resource, and you start the next turn. And I think that is the perfect, like I said, it's a lot like Dragon Ball Z, which is my favorite card game ever. But I also think for a curve-type game, like for a board, like a game that has board and creatures and stuff like that, I think it is a really good middle ground between, like, where it's more interactable than Lorcana, which is good, because you get to do stuff more proactively to your opponent's stuff. But it is less complicated and fiddly and annoying than Magic's stack system, where, like, instants can be played at any time in response to anything. And then at that point, it is literally like a first-in, first-out pile or whatever, where, like, you put a bunch of stuff down, and then your opponent gets to put a bunch of stuff down, and you unwind it in backwards order, and then at any point during unwinding it, you can put new stuff on the stack, and it's just shitty, and it's dumb, and it's more complicated than it needs to be. That's another reason why I think Magic is irritating.
It's always been one of the things that, like, stresses me out about, like, games where you have to, like, fully curate your turn, where it's like, oh, you have this, you can do this, and then that, and then that, and then that, and if you don't do them in that order or check these boxes, then you're wrong.
Right. And again, that's a thing that I love about card games in general, is I love making, like, proper sequencing decisions.
Well, no, I mean, like,
I know what
more
you're getting,
like, you have to play a card first, and if you don't play this card first, then you just don't get to play a card. Like, that amount of sequencing stresses me out, which is actually something I do kind of like about how Lorcana's like, you just do them at any point during your turn. Like,
oh, sure.
I appreciate that aspect of it, where there's less, like, hard, fast phases that you have to go through.
And I'll give you credit. I agree to you. I do think that is a strength of Lorcana, in that, like you said, that within the turn of Lorcana, it's not like Magic, where Magic has, like you said, Magic has a, like, you know, you play phase, then you ready stuff, and then you have your first combat step, and then you have another main phase, and you can't, like... It's all specific segmented, whereas Lorcana, you can do anything in any order on your turn that you can legally do. I agree. That is technically a strength of that game.
I think Pokemon technically works that way, too. Like, certain guys still can't do stuff, like, on their first turn they come in or whatever, or, like, you can only do one of one thing, but you can do that one thing kind of wherever.
Right. And again, the thing that I like most about Star Wars is that it kind of has both of those things. In Star Wars, you can do... since you're both resourcing at the same time, like, that's not a part of the decision tree, which I like. Like, yeah. I like that that's, like, players Agreed. Get to symmetrically do that, so you, like, placing a resource doesn't have to be on your mental stack of things that you need to decide what to do. I appreciate that.
It doesn't have to be a
fucking turn. Yeah. And then, like I said, I think, in my opinion, Star Wars preserves the best of both of those relative to the two, to Magic and Lorcana, where, you know, you can do anything you want in a given action that's available to you, but you can't do everything you want in subsequent actions. So so now you need to weigh any of the one things I can do versus what I think my opponent's going to do next or in the next two actions.
It makes, like, because I haven't played a game, but I did watch the teaching game that happened. And, like, it was very dynamic. It wasn't as, like, because I feel like that dynamicness of DBZ is partially there, but there's also a lot of stress in there because there was a lot of very, very, very particular sequencing and all of that. Where there's some of that, but the fact that it is, like, all of it is more back and forth, like setting up your board, setting up their board, you doing a thing as opposed to, like, declaring combat and all that other shit. It was, you were reacting, like, you were playing cards against each other, not playing your cards and then smushing your side of the board against theirs. Like, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, and another thing I like about Star Wars, which again is a thing that it has more in common with Dragon Ball, and technically less in common with, like, it is a mechanic that other games, card games have adopted, including Magic and, like, its alternate, like, Commander is probably the most popular Magic format now, which is, like, a fan-invented thing where you basically have, like, a leader card.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars kind of works like that, where the other thing about Star Wars that's very interesting is that you start the game with a base in play and with a character in play.
Mm-hmm.
And the character is like a leader card that basically they'll have an ability you can always kind of use every turn.
Yeah.
And then at some designated point in the game, when you have enough resources out,
there's a condition that needs to be met.
Yeah, you can cast them as a character once, and then you'll basically get a big giant turn for free because it doesn't cost that many resources to play them. You just have to have a threshold
of
that
to,
number.
Like, have that power, and then it's like, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, like, for example, I think the Luke that comes in the starter deck,
like, six
is
or
a
something.
Six. So, like, as soon as you have six or more resources in front of you, you don't have to exhaust them, but and for any action, you can play a big giant Luke Skywalker onto the field, and you basically just, like, flip your leader card over, and he turns into, like, a normal character. And I think that's really neat because it gives you, like, it gives each player a big power play at some specific point in the game, no matter what. So no matter how shitty your hand is, you'll get to do this big thing at least once a game regardless.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting sequencing decision because you have to decide when to do yours relative to when to do your opponent's. And I like having a couple cards in play on the field to, like, to let you kind of start building your game plan. Like, Lorcana and Magic do not have that, where, like, when you sit down across from somebody in Lorcana and Magic, you have no idea what they're running until they start playing stuff down. And as soon as you see cards at the table, you'll say, oh, they're playing that color, and they're playing that color.
Yeah, that was one of the nice things about DBZ, is where you had your personality and your style.
Yeah, and
those were just there, they were visible, you're like, okay, I have an idea of what's going on here.
Yeah, and Star Wars works the exact same way, whereas you play your character and you have your base. And your base is both, like, it's just has a number on it that says how much health you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are basic ones that have 30 health and they don't do anything. And then there are more advanced ones that have 25 health, but they have, similar to the character cards, like a one-off. You activate this ability once per game and it does one thing one time.
Okay.
And I think that's all really neat. But again, the upside of, like, usability from that standpoint is I love being able to play both of those cards on the table, and you can look across your opponent and, like you said, get a rough idea before a single card even hits the table otherwise of, like, oh, I know they're using these one or two colors, and I know, like, you know, they're using Princess Leia, so they're probably using more light side cards or, like, more
heroic cards.
Because that's another really interesting facet of the deck building and gameplay in Star Wars, is that basically every card in Star Wars, they have a numeric cost, and they are also trait stamped to either colors or affinities. And so there are four colors that they all represents. Like, I forget what the rule book designates them as.
Who
but there's
cares?
Basically green, red, blue, and yellow cards in Star Wars. And so your character or your base can be a color. So you can have a base that's either, well, that's one of those colors, or a character that's one of those colors, or, like, a combination of the two. So if you want to run, like, red and yellow cards for no penalty, you'll have to basically run either a red character and a yellow base, or the opposite.
Okay.
And then similarly to that, there are some cards that are trait stamped to basically be, like, villainous or heroic, I think is what they're called, instead of, like, light side, dark side.
Mm-hmm.
But if to run those cards with no penalty, you basically have to, that's just determined by your character.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, as you would expect, guys from the Empire and such are villainously stamped, and guys from the Rebellion, like Luke and Leia or whatever, are heroically stamped. And so that combination of character and base determines basically what cards you can run for no penalty. But in Star Wars, you can put any card in your deck at all. And then as a cost of playing those cards, if you try to play a card that is missing one of the affinities that you mm-hmm. otherwise don't have, so if you're running a yellow-red deck mm-hmm. and then you try to play a green card, it's going to cost two extra. It basically costs okay. two extra for each affinity you're missing. So if I ran like... If I ran like a blue-yellow Luke deck,
mm-hmm.
And so he's heroic, yellow and blue, and then I wanted to play a red villainous card, it would cost four more. So wow. you could play it, but in most cases you probably wouldn't want to mm-hmm. want to include it in your deck for that cost. But that's a fascinating thing I've never quite seen before, I don't think.
I hadn't like looked into or even asked you about what went into deck building, because uh-huh. it's been such a short amount of time, I haven't really like... engaged with it at all, but that is fascinating.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think other stuff, like just the general like character powers and stuff. Like I said, the card design on the whole, I have been much more impressed with Star Wars on initial playing a couple games and just looking through the whole set than I have been with any of the mm-hmm. individual Lorcana sets. Where like Luke's power, for example, I think is really, really well tuned, and I think Luke and Darth Vader are like the starter deck pair they put together, like gameplay wise, I think works mm-hmm. really well because they complement each other well. In that, like, Luke's ability puts shield tokens on stuff, which is basically like if a card has a shield token on it, it absorbs any source of damage once, no matter how high it is, and then it just gets discarded. And Darth Vader's power deals damage to stuff, mm-hmm. so you can use it to sweep shield tokens away. So having those two things as the starter deck, I think, is really smart as to something more asymmetrical, where like it's just like two random, you know, leaders that they put together. To introduce people to the game. And then I think both of those powers are well-tuned, too, because Darth Vader basically, like, it costs a resource to tap him, and I think it does one damage to a base by default, and then you do one damage to basically any other target you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then Luke's power is you tap him, and it costs one. And you can put one shield token on a card that was played this turn. And, again, that's another one of those little things that, like, I look at an ability like that.
Really big.
Well, it's big, but I also...
Well, no, like, it's a good idea.
It's also really well-balanced, because I look at an ability like that, and... Again, it's the opposite of the Lorcana thing where somebody, like, they play-tested this. Somebody thought about this a lot. Because mm-hmm. that power would be fucking supremely annoying if just every turn you have one unit out and you can just keep every single turn. My first action is I'm going to put a shield token on this unit. And so you can never interact with it without, like, tapping it twice.
That's terrible.
But they thought of that. Clearly. They fucking did the work and they were like, no, you have to play it on a thing that came out this turn. So you can't just keep stacking them up on the same target.
Mm-hmm.
And... in any given turn, you are basically giving yourself, since it costs a resource, you're basically giving yourself, you can either play a thing that's exactly at curve, so if you're on turn four, mm-hmm. your choices for that turn as Luke are you can play a four-cost thing, or you can play a three or less-cost thing and use Luke's power and juice it up with a shield token, and mm-hmm. that is all so smart that, like I said, and I don't have any off the top of my head specific examples of other cards, but in general, that is my assessment of the card mm-hmm. design in that game, is that I think it is just a higher quality, and I think they thought more about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a better product from mm-hmm. a like game design mechanic standpoint. I think it is. I think just superior people or similarly skilled people who put in a higher amount of effort worked on Star Wars.
I mean, it feels like this was a game made like clearly catering to fans, because there's some deep ass cuts in there that I couldn't even tell you what half the things on these cards are.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's for people who play card games.
Yeah.
Because this is... Oh, I'm trying to remember the company that did this. Is it Flights?
Fantasy Flight made the Star Wars game.
Which they've done card games before.
Yeah.
Whereas Ravensburger does puzzles. This is their first big, like,
uh-huh.
game thing.
Yeah, and I forget what their credentials are. I know their
resources or their pools that they're pulling from are probably vastly different
mm-hmm.
in regards to, like, game design, balance, and whatnot.
Yeah, I know they pulled people from TCG Spaces, whoever they are. Again, mm-hmm. names are escaping me. And again, and before this, they had made that Villainous game, which is not a trading card game, but is a card
it
game
a
based
card
on
game.
Disney
You're
stuff.
Right.
Yeah,
which I do like. I actually do like that game. That game is neat.
And again, looking at linear progression, I personally think that Lorcana is superior to the Villainous games in terms mm-hmm. of gameplay, just because it's a little less convoluted.
Yeah,
like Villainous kind of had a lot of stuff going on.
There's a little much.
So I think that worked against it in terms of being a more accessible thing. I will mm-hmm. say that at least from a like a basic rule standpoint, laziness aside, Lorcana is pretty approachable.
Agreed.
Which is good.
Yes.
But yeah, that's kind of where my head's been at for all of this. So like I said, I'm looking forward to playing some more Star Wars in the near mm-hmm. future, and then we'll see in a set or two as that game evolves. But again, two other really big things that like these have nothing to do with, well, less to do with gameplay necessarily that made me more excited about Star Wars are that cards are three per deck and decks are 50 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need to acquire a total one, basically 25% fewer copies of a card to have a playset.
Yeah.
So in Larkana, you need four of everything if you want to run as many of them as you possibly can. Star Wars, you only need three, which is nice. And then Star Wars is only releasing three expansions a year. They're going to put out one set every 4 months. And Larkana is doing four expansions a year, so they're going to put out one set every 3 months. And I think 4 months is a really good... If I were, again, if it were me deciding how frequently to release card game sets for a TCG product, that's what I would do. Because 4 months is enough time
to just see
to
what
let
happens.
People settle into a format and to not totally overwhelm people's wallets from, like, just products constantly coming out. But it is frequent enough that the game won't stay stale.
Yeah.
Like, if you put out, like, I think three sets a year is right there in the sweet spot of where you want to be. And four sets a year feels a little aggressive to me. And again, Magic is worse than that, because Magic puts out, like, new products every month at this point. And sometimes multiple big products per month, which is one more reason I will never meaningfully interact with it again. But Larkana, like, the four sets a year isn't unheard of, but if I had the choice, I would rather have fewer.
Yeah.
I would rather they rein it in a little bit
and
just make that release calendar a little less cluttered. But yeah, like I said, that's kind of where I'm at with those. So we will report in the future as I, like, I will continue to play little bits of each of them. I'm not, like, totally washing my hands of Larkana by any means.
Yeah.
But again, I do think it is it is a shame for what could have been.
It's a bit of a mess.
It could have been a much better thing than it is right now. And the only ways out I would see are if they do straight up ban stuff, or if they're willing to, like, meaningfully errata stuff, like just straight up change cards completely. But again, both of those things clash with, you know, basic approachability for random people.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that kind of stuff, it makes the game harder to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, those are the only things that could stop the slow, gradual downslide of, like, the game getting slightly worse over time. You'd have to either take stuff out of the card pool or change it to be less problematic.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
Yep.
But yeah, so that's my my screed on card games and card game design.
Hooray!
Yeah, I think we'll call that a conversation, and we'll call it a show. Thank you, Lorraine, for indulging me.
I'm here.
And chipping in here and there.
I try.
Because I'd forgotten you'd played that much Pokemon online and stuff.
Yeah,
back when we were actually playing that a little bit.
I was in there for a bit.
Yeah.
Like, there was a chunk of time where, like, because I think I do have a physical version of that fairy deck built out. I think I did manage to cobble that together. Like, I had a lot of fun with that. It's a silly thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was definitely the most, aside from my fucking tenure in DBZ.
Otherwise, the most card game
you've
ever played.
Yeah. Consistently, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool.
I'll die on my orange garlic hill. That's it.
Nice trip down memory lane. Very good. Well, yeah, I think we'll call it a show. So thank you again, Lorraine, for joining me. Thank you for listening out there.
If you're still here.
Yeah, if you're still here, we appreciate it.
Hell yeah.
If you want to keep on up on what we're doing, like I said, you can go to cubahorrorgames.com, join the Discord. We post the podcast links there. We post our game builds there. If you're into 2D platformers, we're making one called Super Cucumber. I think it's pretty neat. and we'll have more info on there in the weeks and months to come.
Hell yeah.
Can keep on any of the other stuff we're doing? You can follow.
We can confirm Too Many Games. I think it was still
yes,
up in
we
the
are
air.
We are going to be at Too Many Games in Pennsylvania.
In June.
Yep, and late June. Like, I think it's the 20-something.
Like that. It's a weekend.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple months. We'll be repeating it multiple times.
That was something that was up in the air last time. We didn't have a solid confirmation, but we've got it now.
Yeah, so if you want to see us physically, come to the Too Many Games video game convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In June 2024.
Yeah.
If you want to keep us up with us in other ways, follow Cubicorn Games on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, the People Making Games Mastodon. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe to this podcast in most places where podcasts are found.
If you've got a game you want us to check out, podcast@cubicorngames.com.
Yes. Yeah. Email us there. We will be more than happy to check out your indie game on stream.
Yeah.
We like playing other people's indie stuff. With all that said, we are going to call it a show. Thank you again, Lorraine.
Yeah.
Thank you once more to the internet for hanging out. Listen to us yammer about cardboard. And we will see you next time.
Bye.